We've done a lot of stories in recent times on the Tea Party. This next story delves behind the news stories to the Tea Party's secret funding network. We're doing it in response to a few emails I've been getting from some of our well-informed listeners saying, tell us about David and Chris Koch. As I said earlier, their company, Koch Industries, is the second largest privately owned company in America, and together the Koch brothers are waging a highly organized campaign against almost every aspect of progressive politics in the US. They are, among other things, the most deafening climate change deniers. And a lot of the money comes out of oil spills, which we'll be discussing later. And the soiled money is going into every midterm campaign. But we're most interested in how it might be manifesting itself in the Tea Party. They've bankrolled campaigns against healthcare reform, and for people in the know, that vast right-wing network is referred to as the Koch-topus. No, it wasn't a bad pun of mine. Now, my next guest has been tracking their dealings for a few years, and his work has garnered a lot more attention since a New Yorker article appeared on the subject, which borrowed heavily from his own work. Li Feng is a researcher for the Progress Report and Think Progress org at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Now, normally organizations that have progress in their title are of the hard right. Clearly, this is not one of them. And I'm delighted to welcome Li to our Little Wireless program. He's on the blower from Maryland. When did you start working on this story, Li?
Hey, thanks for having me, Philip. I began working on this shortly after President Obama was inaugurated. You know, one of the things I research here at Think Progress is opposition to progressive reforms very broadly. So, you know, I've looked at lobbyists, I've looked at some of the different corporate front groups that have gone out and ran ads and attacked the president and attacked some of his more bold policy items. But through my research, you know, no matter if I was looking at an ad group or a right-wing protest, the money kept going back to Koch Industries and David and Charles Koch. So I began writing stories, and as the Tea Party movement began unfolding, I started tracing the money back to some of the organizers who were setting it up, and again, it went back to the Koch family.
Well, it's working well, because now suddenly they're in the spotlight big time as a result of what you've been doing. Their combined fortune of $35 billion, I understand, is exceeded only by those of Gates and Buffett.
That's right. And they have a unique position in that, you know, since it's a privately held corporation, they have a large amount of control just over their employees. Something that I do not know if it's unique to America, but it is something that's becoming more increasingly done, is employee advocacy. They've got 80,000 employees, and you know, they have an internal holiday called Founders Day, where they celebrate their father, who was an arch conservative, and they tell their employees to go out and lobby on issues that they feel are important. And they have several consultants that help them tell their employees to go out and make phone calls and be active on the issues. So not only do they have the money, but they've got a pool of willing or not supporters.
They're not new players in this, as you're pointing about the father, who, as I recall, was a major cash cow for the John Birch Society.
That's right. You know, what's interesting about the Tea Party movement is that it's not new at all. This sort of paranoid, very fearful, angry vein in American politics has existed, of course, for perhaps all of America's existence. But in the past 50 years, oil plutocrats, particularly the father, Fred Koch, have stirred and organized this paranoid vein in American politics, starting, of course, with the John Birch Society branding Eisenhower a stooge of the Kremlin and attacking President Kennedy as a traitor. But, you know, if you look at the tactics that they're used, what Fred Koch did was set up the John Birch Society, but then once the John Birch Society started, they created cell organizations, organizations against civil rights, organizations against the United Nations, that would go in and organize people on the very grassroots level against their local parent and teacher organization. And now, flash forward to the present day, the Tea Party movement, through David Koch, funds one large organization, and it has much smaller Tea Party organizations in every state and county. And then on every issue, whether it's cap and trade or labor rights, they fund fronts. So it's very elaborate, but it's actually not new at all.
Lee, I understand that a lot of the money comes out of oil in refineries in Alaska, Texas, Minnesota, and the control of 4,000 miles of pipeline.
That's right. It's an extensive network, and David and Charles Koch, for the past 30 years, have been funding groups that have been denying the science underpinning climate change because it affects their direct business. Not only do they refine oil, but they refine Canadian crude oil, which is high carbon petroleum that impacts climate change to a greater degree than other types of petroleum. So they've got a lot of money on the line. So that's one of the reasons that they're organizing these groups and just seeding misinformation into the dialogue.
We have to thank you for the information that their company is responsible for over 300 oil spills in the U.S. It's leaked 3 million gallons of crude into fisheries and drinking water. They're frequently the poster boy for bad conduct, aren't they?
They are. And one kind of insidious role that they have is that they've taken over very legitimate conservative ideologies here in America. You know, it used to be that a responsible libertarian or conservative believed that, you know, even if they opposed the government, they believed in corporate responsibility, corporate citizenship, and that you had to pay for negative externalities like pollution or oil spills. But the Koch Industries machine has essentially taken over the conservative movement and redefined it where they don't want to pay for pollution, they don't want to pay for oil spills, and it's unfortunate because it of course has health effects, but it also changes the entire political dynamic to a terrible degree.
Mind you, they do some ingenious money laundering in the sense, well, let's look at David, who I think quite appropriately has the American Museum of Natural History's dinosaur wing named after him because of his generosity.
That's right. There's a joke I've actually heard. David he likes to put his name on lots of very high-minded sounding organizations like the Lincoln Center and the Smithsonian, and go to a lot of banquets where he's toasted as a do-gooder, but he'll go to all these parties, but the only party you won't see him at is an actual tea party. It's all about his own kind of personal posture within the New York elite. Until recently, very few people even knew that he had such a hidden role behind a lot of vicious racist attack ads and the Tea Party movement. But you know, he's got a social standing that he has to kind of maintain, and so he funnels a good deal of money to some decent philanthropic organizations. But it's mostly, it seems like, a smokescreen to hide what else he's doing.
I should point out that as well as oil, the family has or owns Brawny paper towels, Dixie cups, there's a biggie, Georgia-Pacific lumber, Stainmaster carpet, and Lycra. So it's a comprehensive corporation.
That's right. And not only that, there's a couple things that the New Yorker piece missed. Koch Industries is actually a huge recipient of government money. They lobby very aggressively to service the Defense Department. They supply everything from food to fuel to our Navy and Army. But then they also lobby for smaller contracts in local and state government. So they've got a lot of revenue streams.
What I didn't know was that David Koch ran for VP, for Vice President, on the Libertarian Party ticket. Tell us what sort of issues were on his agenda.
It was a different Libertarian Party back then. David Koch came in, and that's where the name Kochtopus really came about, because he brought his money. Something like two-thirds of every libertarian dollar back in 1980 was spent by David Koch. And him and Ed Clark ran on a broad campaign of destroying government. They hated, and they still hate, the American government. They wanted to remove the CIA and FBI, which are interesting ideas nowadays, but also the FDA and the Department of Education, which are now mainstream ideas within the Republican Party. So while their views might have seemed extremely radical, and of course they received less than 1% of the vote back in 1980, their ideas for eliminating broad swaths of the American government are now essentially boilerplate for many Republican candidates today.
I must say, there was a couple of policies that I'd give at least a diagonal nod to. The proposal to legalize prostitution, recreational drugs, and of all things, suicide.
Well, you know, they fund some interesting libertarian groups that, you know, on the social issues and on immigration and on drug policy, I absolutely agree with. But they don't, unfortunately, concentrate their funds there. Most of the funds are dedicated to rolling back environmental regulations, distorting climate science, and organizing people to go to Capitol Hill with huge signs comparing health reform to the Holocaust. So while there are aspects of libertarian ideology that they espouse that I absolutely agree with, and I think is good for the country, that's not where they put most of their money, unfortunately.
I promise I wasn't being an apologist for them. In fact, I like that William F. Buckley line. I knew Buckley a little, who, of course, was a more trad conservative, who accused them of being a blend of anarchy and totalitarianism.
That's right. They actually sparred with the National Review in the 70s because they were becoming personally and politically involved with the radical libertarian movement back in the day. The National Review accused them of a great conspiracy to buy out the conservative movement. So it's a little bit funny now that the National Review of the 21st century is accusing reporters like myself and Jane Mayer of creating some kind of conspiracy about the Koch industries when they made the same accusation 30 years ago.
This is LNL, abc.net.au/RN, and my guest is Li Feng, and we're talking about his ongoing investigations into the Kochtopus, the powerful Koch brothers in the US. You talked about the way they get the staff to line up and sing from the same sheet, but they're also very good at sort of front organizations, aren't they? Like Citizens for a Sound Economy.
Yeah, Citizens for a Sound Economy is really the foundation for what you see in the Tea Party movement today. Citizens for a Sound Economy would hire a state organizer in every state in America, set up even smaller local groups, and then, for example, in 1990, George Bush the first actually worked with the Democrats in Congress and proposed regulations to deal with acid rain. And what Citizens for a Sound Economy did in 1990 was found a variety of groups called, even I believe something like Citizens for the Environment, that would go out and battle these regulations against acid rain. Now, again, fast forward to 2010, in California, there's the most bold, pioneering climate change law. It's called AB 32. And in California, there's a branch of a group called Americans for Prosperity California, which is a subsidiary of a Koch Industries group, the modern-day Citizens for a Sound Economy. And they're organizing tea parties in Sacramento, big protests. But, of course, this is only one element of it. There's a large think tank in San Francisco called the Pacific Research Institute. Again, a Koch-funded organization that creates reports and places people in the media to talk about the dangers of a climate change law and how it'll be terrible for California's economy. So on one side, they have the organizing. On the other side, they have the media and the quote-unquote academic center. And then on the other side, they've already funneled $1 million to the official campaign chest, so they're running advertisements on their hiring lobbyists in Sacramento. So it's multifaceted and very sophisticated.
David Axelrod, Obama's senior advisor, said what they don't say is that in part the Tea Party is a grassroots citizens movement brought to you by a bunch of oil billionaires. Have you been able to prove beyond doubt that they're they're funding it?
Absolutely. And I don't have to prove it. David Koch's already taken credit for it. There's an interesting video. David Koch has this conference every year with his different political organizations, and they file into this large banquet hall, and each representative from his state groups stands up and takes the mic and looks directly into the eyes of David Koch. It sounds cultish, but it's true. And tells him about all the accomplishments they've made. And if you watch this video from last year, each representative, all funded by David Koch, stands up and looks him in the eye and tells him how many tea parties they've started, how many protests, and what their protests have accomplished. And, you know, it's insidious, but it's not something you can't prove. That David Koch continually funds and is taking credit for the large Tea Party movement, but at the same time, there's actual video of his operatives bragging to him about their accomplishments.
Well, on what one might loosely describe as our side of politics, we've got the billionaire currency speculator George Soros writing out very large checks. Are the Kochs outspending even George?
Here's the thing. George Soros probably spends more than Koch Industries, but you know, for full disclosure, where I work now has received funds from George Soros, and to be honest with you, my first job in life was actually funded by George Soros. I worked at a clinic for prostituted women in Baltimore when I was in high school, and that was funded by George Soros. So, you know, although George Soros funds a lot of causes, none of them support his bottom line. These are all groups. Yeah. Some of them are political. Some of them are more community-based. But what's interesting about David Koch is that these groups that he's funding certainly support his bottom line. And not only that, David Koch works with a group of other billionaires and American businessmen to convene a meeting twice a year to coordinate their funding. So it's not just David Koch. It's also Bruce Kopner, the hedge fund manager. It's also Phil Anderson and these other right-wing billionaires who work together to coordinate their funds. So if you take the cumulative effect, they have much, much more money. It's in the realm of billions of dollars that they're spending every year.
Look, thanks for that. I'd just like to make an observation about David Koch. He had prostate cancer a while back, donated millions to cancer research. Sounds like a good thing to do, but it's tainted with the terrible irony that his company produces massive amounts of formaldehyde. Li Feng, researcher at the Center for American Progress Action Fund, who's been researching the Kochs for a couple of years. Late Night Live, ABC Radio National, etc. Coming up... the likes of Dennis Thatcher.